The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome to the Instructor Podcast. This is a show that helps you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better driving school. As always, I am your mediocre host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but I'm even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because this is the fourth and indeed final installment of the In Conversation With series. So before we go any further, I'd like to take a moment to give a massive shout out and a big thank you to Diana Todd for joining me on this series. I thoroughly enjoyed spending all that time with her, picking her brains, having the chat, and also probably annoying her a little bit. Learned a lot, enjoyed it thoroughly, got to stroke a dog. What more could you want from a series? And I hope you guys have enjoyed this too. It's not necessarily aimed to be like a deep dive where you can take a thousand things away from and apply to lessons. It's aimed to learn more about that instructor, how they did stuff, and hopefully give you a few nuggets along the way. But before we get stuck into this final episode, which is all about the pitfalls and positives of social media, allow me to point you in the direction of the Instructor Podcast Premium. Over there, we have got a ton of content ranging from 5 minutes to, I think, 3 hours is the longest one we've done, and everything in between to help you become an even more awesome driving instructor, run a better business, and even manage your health. But we do take it a step further. There is what we refer to as an interactive tier, where not only do you get all the content, but you get to come along and join in live with some coaching sessions that we do that we refer to as problem solvers. You can come and watch podcasts recorded live, and you get to come to exclusive Q&As and expert sessions where you get to ask the guest questions after their presentation. Best place to find this is to head to the show notes or go to www.theinstructorpodcast.com. But for now, let's get stuck into the show. So I'm delighted to be joined by Diana Todd. How are we doing, Diana?
Doing really well, thank you. How are you?
No, pleasure to have you, because when we started talking about doing this, I did ask you for some subjects, ideas, and one that came up that perked my attention is one of my favourite ones to talk about, is social media and driving instructors. So let's kick off with this question. Is it toxic or is it beneficial? Does it lean one to the other or is it a mixture?
I'm going to say it's a bit of a mixture. And I think it depends on the type of person that you are as well. If you have the ability to see something, recognize that it's absolutely, I don't know, clickbait or it's not helpful and dismiss it, then fine. You know, that's absolutely fine. But if you're the type of person to feel attacked or get upset by comments being passed or take things on social media literally as gospel, then it's maybe not the right place for you, or not all of it is the right place for you. You have to be able to find your niche of what's appropriate for you and the person that you are.
I think I lean towards it being more toxic. But part of that comes down to what you just spoke about, the idea of responsibility. I think that, and I think this is why I think it's more toxic, because the people that go on there and interact and read and the people that are gaining from the social media, if you like, I think that there's a responsibility there to learn, interact correctly and engage correctly and that side of it. But there's a responsibility that people are providing the content to provide content in a responsible way. I think that I obviously put a lot of stuff out, and if someone misinterprets it, I try not to look at it as them misinterpreting it. I try to look at it as I've not explained it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's always a limit there, because if 10,000 people read it and 9,999 people read it correctly or the way I intend it, it's probably not me.
Yeah.
But I still need to take a little bit of responsibility for that one person. And I think that responsibility aspect. So if you're on there and you're replying to someone or commenting on someone's post, whether it's TikTok, Facebook, whatever, you have a responsibility, in my opinion, to be a decent human being. And if you're not, then that's where that toxicity comes from. And the same way, if you're posting stuff, you've got a responsibility to share something that is decent and understandable and useful. And whether that is advertising something you're selling, whether it's advertising something that's free, whether it's talking about something or starting a conversation. So I think I would lean to being it towards it being more toxic.
Yeah, and I think as well, I was very fortunate. I had a supportive group that didn't feel toxic. Mm. So I suppose I was kind of nurtured alongside that. And I alluded to in one of our earlier episodes, there were some groups that I wasn't loving. I was a member of them because I thought, oh, perhaps. But every single comment or, you know, I could do it now. I could go onto any one of those groups, pick a post, and I guarantee you there'll be a comment under it with absolute diatribe. And that wasn't helpful. So I suppose I was able to pick and choose. I think the other fact is that not everything that you see on social media is accurate. It's what people's opinions are or what they perceive to be true. Could just ask anybody a question about that, the 12 o'clock rule at the roundabouts, and 50% of people say it's a thing and 50% of people say it's not a thing and what have you. So I think it's worth knowing that. I think there's also an element of how addictive it is. And if you ask anybody now, I will pick up my phone and automatically my finger will go to the Facebook app, whether I want it to or not. And my husband's given up social media last year. And what he did was he signed out of it and recognised how many times he was actually clicking on the button, even though he knew he wasn't signed in. And that almost was a trigger to show him how automated that is humans to do that. So I think there's stuff to be mindful of around that. And but I think there is also an element, if you find the right group for you, we started a group and we don't post loads on there, but there's lots of helpful tips and there's lots of things and people can ask questions. And we have our weekly live Q&A anyway, so I tend to, you know, post and share that. If you are finding those things helpful, then by all means, join them. But I think if you're going to run a group or contribute towards it or post, like you said, you have a responsibility to make sure that when you're not horrible, I'll say horrible, there was two other words that sprung to mind before I used the word horrible. Not horrible. And if you're going to run the group, that you make sure that nobody else is. I think that's really important. Not always the case, because there's people that with 10,000 group members and all the rest of it, and things will slide under the radar. But I suppose that's where I think you've set up a nice community. So I'll sometimes get a message from somebody saying, have you seen this comment on a group? It doesn't feel appropriate. And we'll be on it straight away. Now, sometimes the written word isn't how somebody has meant it to come across. So there's a little bit of give and take. There's certainly been that on our groups. But if it's blatantly obvious that you're being horrible, then the owners of that group, the admins of that group, need to take responsibility to make sure that nobody feels attacked. Because that's what it is. And it's in their homes. And that's what I have a real issue with, because it can be really subtle, these little mini attacks. Very, very subtle, actually. But it's just chipping away at somebody's confidence or their ability or their self-esteem.
For clarity, the 12 o'clock rule is where it works. It's coincidence. Yeah. It's not a rule.
Yeah, 100% yeah. Agree with you.
That's a shame. I was looking forward to the debate. I don't know. I struggle with this with social media, because I think that it is so useful. It's so useful. Mm-hmm. I think one of the problems I think we have, you'll see this a lot when people saying, why are you asking that question? Google it. Right? Asking on Facebook is Googling.
Yeah.
It's just a different form of it. And, you know, you could find an incorrect answer by Googling something. It's way, the way times change. You know, we used to look up the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah.
You know, we don't tell people to go, I'm sure there are people that tell that, you know, but sometimes we need context. Sometimes we need things expanding. And if I don't know the answer to a question and I Google it, it gives me a static answer, a factual answer. I may not understand it. Now, yes, I could come on Facebook and I could ask that question in a different manner. I could say, I have looked on Google this. I still don't understand it. Can someone explain it to me? But maybe I'm a bit embarrassed about saying that because then I feel stupid because I've looked and I still don't understand it. Maybe if I just ask the question, then someone can help me. Because, you know, what is it? You try and teach a fish to, you judge a fish and its ability to climb a tree, the fish is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, but you judge a monkey and its ability to swim, the monkey is stupid. Different people are going to struggle with different things. So it annoys me a lot. Now, I also think, and this is where I get stuck between a rock and a hard place, that sometimes, I might regret saying this again, I think sometimes people do need to toughen up.
Mm-hmm.
Because because you don't like the answer you get doesn't mean that the answer is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone says, go, you know, here's a question, they ask the question, and someone says, go and look on the DVSA website, here's a link.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad answer.
That's a great answer.
Just because they haven't given you the answer doesn't make it a bad answer. I think people still see that as negative. And to me, it's not.
No.
So I think that there's an element there of people that are responding, and we're speaking specifically about comments and stuff now, I suppose, but it's people that are responding need to do better sometimes.
Yeah.
And people that are asking need to do better sometimes.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it can be too easy just to sort of give a sweeping statement, whether that be the original post or whether that be the person that's commenting on it. What I liked about what you said earlier about the comment where they said, check out the DVSA and here's the link, that's helpful, but it's given some accountability to the person to find out their own research. That's no different to our learners coming to us and you saying, let's look at how we would find that out together. Now, I'm not a fan of using that if I genuinely don't know the answer. I'll own that and go, do you know what? I've got no clue. Should we look it up together? I'm fine with that. That doesn't bother me at all. But I think it's a really helpful resource to say, this is where I found it. In fact, we do that with part one training. We make a point of saying, if you have come across a question that you do not know the answer to, we need you to go and research that, look it up, find out where it is, and then reference where you found it. Because if you've struggled with it, somebody else has struggled with it. I think what I like about social media and the right social media for you is I use it as a form of idea generation. So somebody might put a comment, or they might put a need, or they might request some information about stuff. And if somebody's doing that, I'm thinking there's a need there. There's an opportunity there for us to support them. There's an opportunity there for us to help. But equally so, I use that when people share their experiences and I go, oh my God, that's a bloody brilliant idea. There was a lady... We used to do, and I need to pick this up again. I'm writing down analogies. And I'm saying, you know, what good analogies do you use in your driver lessons to help pupils connect with what you're trying to say? And this girl said, it's a bit like pushing a swing. Initially, when you're starting off, you're going to need a great big push and an amount of power. I think it was Kat, actually, one of our mentors. And then when they've got that momentum, you just might need to tap it with your fingers. And it's helping people link to those skills. And I love social media for that. And I love your podcast for that, actually, because it generates ideas. It can help sort of take you down the path. When it's not helpful is when it's inaccurate.
Mm.
And yeah, when it's a little bit challenging, shall we say.
This is, I suppose, the other thing with that is I'm not the biggest fan of Ricky Gervais, but, and I'm going to butcher this joke, but his joke somewhat along the lines of, Imagine seeing an advert in a newspaper for guitar lessons and then ringing them up and shouting and saying, I don't want guitar lessons. You wouldn't do it. So if you see a post on Facebook that's like not for you, that you don't like, why comment?
Yeah.
You wouldn't ring up and say, I don't want the guitar lessons. If you see an advert for a webinar or, you know, whatever, why say, I don't like this?
Exactly.
You know? And that doesn't mean that you can't critique it. But it's like a justifiable critique. It needs to be worthwhile. If you're just going to moan and bitch and slag it off, then just keep your mouth shut. It's not relevant. It's not for you. If you come across something on social media that you don't understand, chances are it's not for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had some amazing abuse over the last few years that in so many ways I've loved. One that springs to mind was, I stopped doing it actually now, but I used to do a post on a Friday, five awesome things, and it'd be five awesome things about, and then I'd do that. And then one time someone kicked off, I think it was something along the lines of, why are you using the word awesome? It's such an Americanism. And I'm like, I don't think five mediocre things sound as good. Five good things, you know. I like the word awesome. I'm just saying awesome. Why are you complaining about this? Is this how you spend your time, complaining that someone on Facebook has used the word awesome? Chris Spencer, bless him, chipped in and pointed out that it's an English word, not an American one. So.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, what's the point of that? And then he's got himself in an argument with people because people were jumping in to stick up for me, which he didn't ask him to do, just to clarify. But they've jumped in to stick up for me. And it's like, what? Why are you arguing with this? This is just someone that's tried to be nice and you're complaining about the use of the word awesome. So I think if you come across something that's not for you, just ignore it. Your dog is currently trying to eat my back. that'll be my big thing. But by the same token, again, putting the responsibility on the poster, the post person creating it, to know that when you put that post out, it's not going to be for everyone. And expect some people to come back and criticize it, and don't be surprised and don't let it put you off. You know, like I said, I've had some brilliant criticisms over the years. I had the guy recently that described me as the child in the playing with the room with a bunch of adults, and I was like, I can finish 11th in a 10-person race, which brilliant criticism. I had someone years ago on my driving school page, I put a picture up of myself and it said, look at the size of his forehead. I can remember thinking, I don't think I've got a big forehead. I don't understand that. And I spent it, and I'm bald. That's not my forehead. It goes all the way up. I'm bald. And he'd actually spelled far wrong. So he'd actually said, look at the size of his foreheads.
Oh, God.
But yeah, so I think that would be my advice in that sense, that expect people to criticize because they will. But also, if it's not for you, just leave it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, not everything needs critiquing. Just let it be. But I think, going back to something you said before, it's about finding somewhere that works for you. And maybe you're the person that gets off on that, that gets off on being bitchy and moany or enjoys having their stuff ripped to shreds. Great. There's plenty of groups out there that do that. If that's what you want, there's places to find it. But go online. Find a couple of Facebook groups, well, go on them all, find out which ones are for you, leave the ones that aren't for you, and then focus your attention on the ones that are right. And that's it.
Yeah. I think, you've hit that nail on the head. I've had to remove certain people over the years, certain groups, I've unfollowed things because it wasn't helpful to me. And I don't mean that, when I say it wasn't it was actually detrimental to me. And I thought, I'm not no longer welcoming this. I'm not sitting in my sofa listening and hearing that. And I think that you have to draw a line under that, because it was getting to the point where I was like, oh, do they mean this, or do they mean me, or are they talking about that situation? And I'm like, no, done. Absolutely done. You've got to be able to take a step back from that and recognise when it's not helpful anymore. But I'm also sort of very wary of saying that it's purely toxic, because actually we've built our business off social media. And as a mum, I've built successful experiences for Sophia over social media because I can see what people are doing and I can, you know, I'm more aware of what's going on. Yeah, so we've managed to connect with people through social media. They've found our resources. They get free CPD every Monday with the live Q&As. You guys post lots of stuff in terms of the instructor podcast, like little top tips, and you've got your 5-minute driving test tips. And there's lots of helpful things out there that people can absolutely utilise. But it's just finding that balance as well. I think as well, one of the sort of other things to be mindful of is your presence on social media and how you're portraying yourself. So I'm very, very aware that there's Diana Todd, the driving instructor, there's Diana Todd support, Diana Todd inspire, and then there's Diana Todd, the mum, friend, sister, daughter, etc. And there's definitely a crossover there in terms of who follows what. And I'm mindful sometimes of what I might post. I started to set up like a really, really personal profile and I just couldn't be bothered. I was like, no, I don't do anything that bad that I care so much. But it's definitely in the back of my mind.
I think that's a really good point, though. I think a few years ago, I started up a separate page called Dogs Don't Think You're Mediocre. And it was all about like the low opinions we have of ourselves. Yeah. And my example is always my dog. Because I used to think I was very mediocre. That was my thing. I'm just mediocre. I'm not crap. I'm not good. I'm just mediocre. And I can remember I did some work with been on the podcast, actually, a lady called Shabnam Raja. And I remember she just said something to me one day. She went, does Cassie, that's my dog, does Cassie think you're mediocre? I'm like, no, she thinks I'm awesome. Never seen anyone that excited to see me. Mm-hmm. She went, like, okay. I'm like, oh, yeah, see what you've done there. My dog's my favourite thing, right? My dog likes me. All right, yeah, okay, you've got me. So that inspired that page. And there was some really good stuff on there. I should bring it back, actually. But even that got some negative interaction because, again, it was being seen by different people. And it was actually when it started to be seen by instructors, it got the negative interaction. But I think that having your own personal check-in sometimes and an audit of your own social media and sometimes someone doing that. So I was lucky enough recently to have someone point out to me the mistake that I was making on my personal social media. They pointed out to me that some of the posts I were making appeared like they were aimed at people, and they weren't.
No.
But it was being taken a certain way. Mm. I'm like, okay, I need to change that. The ironic thing is at that time there was one post that was aimed at someone, and it was aimed at a few people. It was sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah.
Like sometimes the post is just a post. It's not about this. And no one noticed that one.
I remember that post.
Yeah. And that was the one post I'd had for a while that didn't get a zero like or interaction or anything. That was quite amusing. But I think you're right. I think it's how we use it. And it's such a positive. I feel like it's more toxic at the minute. I do. I'm very specific with the way I use social media. I post my stuff. When I post my stuff, I tend to have a little scroll, see what else is going on. As soon as it starts getting, I don't want to say negative, but as soon as it starts becoming unbeneficial,
yeah,
I come off it. Now, sometimes that'll be the first post I see. And it's like, okay, yeah, that'll do for today. That's my limit. But other times I'll go down a fun little rabbit hole, you know, see someone's post like, and then I'll comment on it and that kind of stuff. So I think it's how you manage it. But I think also, like, say the stuff you're putting out. So I want to make this about me, but where I find it tricky, I had a conversation with someone about this the other day, is I'm creating this content and then putting the content out, but it doesn't always feel like the social media I put out is beneficial because it's telling people the content's there. So the content, the podcast is beneficial, but the post is just telling people about the podcast.
Yeah.
So the post itself isn't beneficial. So I sometimes wonder if the content is beneficial enough. And I was talking to someone the other day and they were moaning to me about the stuff I put out. And they were saying that, well, I like the podcast. I just don't like the post. I'm like, so just to clarify, you want me to create the podcast, but you don't want me to tell anyone about it. And it's like, there's a balance there somewhere. And yes, of course, I can go over the top of it, but there is a balance there.
It's so frustrating because we need to post more. Like, not so much in terms of promotion and marketing, but more, we put so many sort of videos out and we do lots of different resources like that. But I think we need to just interact more. But one interaction leads to another interaction leads to another. And before you know it, you're down a 2-3 hour rabbit hole because there's so many groups, so many posts, so many things that people just need support on. And I'm so wary. I'm probably overthinking this, but I'm so wary of helping people out on all these other groups because I'm thinking, I just want to help. It's not an advertiser. It's not a promotional thing. I just want to make sure that they've got the right resources for them. But it's so time consuming. It's so time consuming. And we once got negative feedback over doing a free Zoom session on the 5 pillars of road safety for free. In order to raise money for Road Peace, somebody had a massive go at us because they were like, you're just doing it to promote yourself. So I was like, I really promise you I'm not giving up my Sunday morning to do a free Zoom session to raise money for charity to promote ourselves. We hadn't even mentioned our, I think we had mentioned our company, but it was more to do something right. And I think that was the moment I was like, oh. How have you got a negative out of that?
And we're just taking a quick break from today's conversation to tell you about the Instructor Podcast Premium. If you're enjoying these chats and want to take your development even further, Premium is where you'll find over 200 hours of exclusive content. Everything from 5-minute quick wins to deep dives and 3-hour expert sessions. You'll get access to our entire back catalogue, workbooks to help you put ideas into action, and if you join the interactive tier, you can jump on live coaching calls, Q&As, and even watch podcasts recorded live. It's all designed to help you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better business. So, if you want less noise and more action, head to theinstructorpodcast.com or check the link in the show notes. But for now, back to the episode.
Even that, let's say you were, and
yeah, exactly.
It's your company, you're mm-hmm. allowed to promote it, mm-hmm. and especially if it's free, and as a, you're doing two things, you're promoting your company and you are raising money for charity. Yeah. I'm not saying that's what you did, but even if that was the case, what's the problem?
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that would have been my response to that, you know, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. And
yeah.
But I think my thing when I go on tends to be, if it's got 10 comments or more, I'm not commenting.
No.
I don't. You know, now, sometimes I'll look. If someone's got loads of comments, I think, oh, I wonder what some of these say. I'll have a note. But it's like, what I'm going to say is going to be, chances are, it's going to be covered. Or someone said it better than me or whatever. So I'll just dismiss it. But there's been a lot said about this recently. And I've said it a lot as well. But I'm interested in your thoughts. Is there too much? So on social media in particular, is there too much for driving instructors? PDIs, I suppose, in particular.
Yes. Yeah, I do. I think there's too much, if I'm honest.
But you contribute. So.
I do. I'm gonna clarify. Yeah, no, I'm going to clarify. I absolutely think there's too much. In some ways, and again, I think that's up to the individual. I think that all we can do is try to provide the right resources for the PDIs and the ADIs, but it's up to them, and I know we've said this, to dial into what they think is helpful. I think the reason why we created our own group was because we found, and this isn't the case for all of them, we found that the other groups just didn't feel safe. And that's a really bold statement. And I'm not saying that lightly, if I'm honest. They didn't feel safe. And that's not all. I cannot stress enough, because there's lots of lovely supportive groups out there. But we wanted to create one that we had ownership of to make sure it was safe. And I think we're doing it from a kind place, again, if I'm honest.
See, I would actually disagree slightly, because you said it's on the person whether it's too much. I just think there's too much.
Yeah.
Because I counted the other day. I think it was currently 17 online memberships that are available. I think there's probably more, but there's some that I don't know about. Both you and I have online memberships.
Yeah.
And that is too much. You know, if there is a PDI or an ADI that's looking, deciding, how do you decide which ones to go for? And now, just because there's too much doesn't mean we should stop doing it.
Yeah.
This is the thing, it's getting the balance right. We need to make sure that the content about that is quality. But I think my question would be, if someone's listening to this, not sure how to navigate that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure whether to come to your membership or mine or one of the other 17. How do they navigate?
My advice to people is always check out the free stuff. Go and lurk, for want of a better word, in some of the groups or on some of their YouTube channels or in some of their helpful Facebook videos or whatever it may be that is free. And if that person speaks in a way that resonates with you, then perhaps consider joining that mentorship or that membership or the podcast or whatever it may be. I think as well, I think that it's worthwhile diversifying. So if you've been with one for a bit, it is perfectly okay. The amount of people that will message us, we don't get many people leaving, but when they do, they're always so lovely about it. They message and go, really sorry, but just going to have a change of scenery. I love what you do. I think I've got from you from this. No doubt I'll be back in 6 months. You know, please check in, blah, blah, blah. And I love that. I think that is, I'm going to steal your word, awesome. It is awesome because they're getting, first of all, they're recognising they've got from us what they needed to get from us in that moment. Great, thanks. And second of all, they're going out to explore something else without potentially feeling overwhelmed. Because there is some conflicting information out there. And I think you almost have to be comfortable in your own knowledge base before you can then take on some more information. And I'll give you an example of that. I said in previous episodes that I'd had several trainers because I recognised that there was a lack, and I went from one, and then the second one insisted, and I mean insisted, that I teach a 6-point check and reference points. Now I was comfortable in my ability to know that I did not want to teach that way because I didn't understand it. I certainly didn't drive that way. And therefore, I felt comfortable challenging her on that and very quickly realised she was not going to be the right trainer for me because of that. But I had to experience, I got lots of good stuff from her, so I cannot stress that enough, but that overshadowed the good stuff for me. So there'll be lots of good things, and there's stuff now that she taught me that I use to this day. So I say that with respect. It was just that bit wasn't for me. That overshadowed some of the good things. And you'll find that with training providers as well. You've just got to try. You've got to try them. And in some ways, I think, 17 feels too much. Just feels like we're just diluting the message slightly.
It is too much, but also the cat's out of the bag now. Is that the right phrase?
Yeah. The horse has bolted.
Yes, the horse has bolted. So it's there, and there'll be more that come, and that's fine. You know, we were in that position. I think that our role now is to make people aware of what's there and help them choose. And as you've said, if someone leaves my membership, I love the reasons why they leave.
Yeah.
There's some awesome, well, there's some annoying ones, I'm not going to lie, but there's some awesome ones, like you said, when it's like, I've got loads from this, I'm going to try someone else. Yeah. And then when they come back, it's like, yes, yeah, excellent. And then my favourite one was, I probably shouldn't say this. I did an episode with Dan Hill, and we were talking about deciding if the job's right for you, because mm-hmm. it might not be right. 2 days later, someone left the membership and sent me a message and said, listen to your episode with Dan Hill, decided it's not right for me. Oh, okay. So that was amusing. But yeah, there's too much, but we just need to help people navigate it, mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing. And I completely forgot the other thing I was going to say. So even I do it. But one of the things I've spoken about before my membership, I don't know if I've done this publicly, so I'm going to go through it now, is my driving instructor mixed grill.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard this analogy?
I have heard this mixed grill analogy.
I love this. This works. I mean, like, I'm vegan, you know, but whatever. Because I genuinely think that if you have a mixed grill, the one thing that no one ever leaves is a steak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there will be people listening going, I never leave anything. You'll get my point, right? But everyone prioritizes the steak.
Mm-hmm.
Everything around it, they can leave a little bit of, you know, leave a few peas, yeah. I might leave a little bit of sausage, whatever, yeah. So this is how my analogy works. You find your driving instructor's steak.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the one person or the thing that you keep going back to? And it can change over time, but at that point, what's the main thing?
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the peas, what's the mushrooms, what's the sausage, whatever? What are the bits you complement it with? And you'll go to and get some information from here, and then you go back to your main source, and it might be to double check the information, it might be to come back with an idea, it might be to get more training. But that steak is the thing that you keep coming back to while you dabble in the other stuff. So I suppose my question for you, what's your driving instructor steak?
Oh, it was Lou was my driving instructor steak. She was my sense checker. Well, from a resource point of view, like, where do I go?
What's the thing that you come back to, that you keep coming back to, that's your stake, essentially?
The where I get my resources from, or the thing that I'm keen for other people to know?
Yours, personally.
Okay. Oh, my stake. I'm just staring out the window here whilst I think. I think Phil is probably my stake. That sounds awful. He's my stake. I'm laughing at the other analogies that were available to me, and thank God I did choose steak.
And not sausage.
Sausage, exactly. But I think I take lots from lots of different people. So I mentioned to you earlier that sometimes it's a mixed grill. Sometimes it's complemented with a dauphinoise potatoes. Sometimes it's complemented with a salad. And I think I get that from others. So I will read Racy Graves' book. I will sit in the back of Emma Cottington's lesson with my pupil, and I'll get little snippets from there. I will listen to the instructor podcast, where I will hear like little nuggets I was sharing with you earlier that I was going to say I'm guilty of doing reflections at the end of lessons. I don't think it's a guilty thing of actually. But I have been given a new perspective because I had steak with salad that day. And that salad suggested that I offer my pupils the opportunity to do their reflective vlog after the lesson. We could do a recap for sure. So I've kind of started to sort of push that onto them. Loved the fact, though, that you came back to check how my meal was and said to Stuart, but what about the pupils that don't actually fill out the reflective log? So again, you know, I had that comfort zone as well. Yeah, I think Phil's my stake, though, to be honest with you. I go to him with most sort of queries, questions.
Yeah, so if you use the podcast example, you come and listen to that episode with Stuart, which mm-hmm. we're talking about, something you're not sure about, who do you go and confirm that with?
Phil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the stake. Who you go back
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I was thinking about mine the other day, and at the minute, I think I've got a vacancy for my stake, or in my case, my mushrooms. I don't think I've got that go-to, and I don't know why. And that's not a criticism to anyone. I think maybe this is one of the problems I face this year. I'm overflooded a little bit with different people. I need to find someone to drop back and navigate to. But you mentioned the podcast there and dipping into it. I want to touch on this a little bit. It's slightly self-indulgent, but I didn't want to speak about it. So I think it ties into what we're talking about. Because it's something you spoke to me about earlier today. And it's about how you found this podcast useful in terms of like the people you've met and your friends and stuff like that. And I think this can be applied to anything. It can be applied to Facebook. It can be applied to different podcast YouTube channels. But, you know, screw it. We'll talk about this one. Tell me a little bit more about that, about what you were saying about how this podcast has impacted you.
So Phil actually introduced me to the podcast. I wasn't a podcast person beforehand, completely underutilized resource for me, partly because my driving lessons are only like a few minutes down the road, so there wasn't that opportunity. It's given me ideas, so it makes me want to be a better driving instructor, if I'm honest. So some of the things that you've suggested in the past, like the nighttime lessons, there was something in particular that you did, which was there's something I shared it with a group, a PDI group, mentioned you as a what's the word when you resource somebody? I can't think of the right word. I gave you recognition for it anyway. And it got shot down in flames because I think it was like a cancelling lesson thing where you allowed them money in the bank or something like that. So it gives me better ideas. It makes me want to be a better driving instructor because I'll hear all these lovely things that you've thought of, that you've done, just some of the challenges. I think that you were the one that got me thinking about partnering up with a local garage. So I work with M53 Tyres and, you know, I'll get my pupils to like go see how a tire's been changed or what have you. They'll use my locking wheel nut things. I'm not a garage person. Little things like that. I also think you help, well, the instructor podcast, you and your guests, help me come up with my own ideas as well. Like you might say something and I'll go, oh, I need to do more of that. And I'll start to write it down. I think you've introduced me to the idea of having a better social media presence, something that I have actually dropped one of the balls on, partly because I'm managing all the other ones and I'm just like, ugh, me, I'm the last person, I'll do that later. And I've made friends. Like, I consider you a friend. I consider Emma Cottington a friend, San Harper. I'm not going to go through everybody because actually that's going to be, I'm going to upset somebody by accident. But I don't know. I've said earlier that I'm quite open and honest with people. And because of that, I've opened myself up to allowing those friendships to happen. And that's been brilliant.
See, for me, that's the perfect way to use this stuff, whether it's social media, podcasts, YouTube channels, whatever. Forget that it's mine, you know. What you've just described there, you don't take on board every single thing I say. You take the things that are relevant for you and then go and apply them, or even better, use them to inspire you and go and create some new idea and go and venture. I think that's how it should be used. You know, it's finding the thing that works for you. You've mentioned the podcast. Finding the thing that works for you is something you can get stuck into and listen and then use it.
Yeah.
I think it's that using it's key. So whether social media is toxic or not, whether the amount of content there's too much or not, finding the thing that works for you and then actually putting it into action.
Yeah.
I've got a sneeze coming. that's the key. Because whether you think social media is toxic or not, If it's no use, it's irrelevant. But if you can go on there and manage the toxicity of it and the negativity of it and find the bits that are useful and then actually take a pen and paper and write those down and then transfer them into a book that you highlight that you then go and put into actual action and then reflect and see how that action has worked and then adjust it accordingly and go again. If you can do that, then you're using social media in that way properly, using the podcast, using the YouTube channel properly. If you're just scrolling and looking at what people say and not taking any action, well, that's how you want to use it. That's how you use it, but you're not gaining from it.
Yeah. And I think that's key. I remember fast track to me going on long journeys and I can automate voice notes. So what I would say is, hey Siri, take a voice note. I'd be like, remind me to set up a social media weekly wins or something like that. Because when I'm listening and I'm driving, I've not got the opportunity to go back and I know that I won't listen. And that's something that I'm aware of. There's lots of times that people will listen to the podcast, go, I've not given that my full attention, go back, listen, take notes. And I love those people for being able to do that. That's not me. I don't have the time so I had to find a workaround to do that. And that was automating voice notes so that I could then have the idea whilst I was, you know, thinking or in the gym or doing whatever, automate that voice note and say, remind me to add to my list weekly wins, or remind me to share with my learners whether they want to do after dark lessons, or remind me to get in touch with M53 tires, or, you know, stuff like that. And that was my workaround, because it was the idea generator. And I find as well, if you miss a couple of podcasts, I do feel like I'm quite behind in the sort of podcast world at the moment, because I did take that mini sabbatical. I say mini sabbatical, I worked my arse off, but I did it, you know, from a CPD point of view. But I feel like I'm ready. I'm ready to dip back into it and go, not feeling overwhelmed by it, but going into that structured environment. And you sent me a lovely podcast with the perimenopause that is going to be my next lesson, which I am absolutely looking forward to.
It's interesting you say that, because at the minute I'm not listening to podcasts very much.
Mm-hmm.
Which anyone that knows me will like be flabbergasted by, but my brain needs a break.
Yeah,
you know, a bit like you were just saying, I've got the stuff going on that I need to focus on. So like educational stuff, I'm not really listening to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to a bit of history stuff. I'm listening to some like football stuff, but I mainly just listen to music right now, because
mm-hmm.
I know that I'm not going to gain anything from listening to these. And if I'm listening to something for entertainment, it may as well be something entertaining rather than an educational thing. But, you know, I look back at why I changed the format of the podcast back in April. There were lots of reasons, but the one that triggered it was when someone said that they'd listened to an episode. I don't think it was actually my podcast, but they listened to a podcast on the way to a workshop, then another podcast on the way back. And I said, so what have you applied from that? And they said, nothing.
Nothing.
I'm like, okay. Was there nothing to apply? And then when we went through it, there were things that could have applied. But it's just that idea of consuming content, again, whether it's social media, whatever, just consuming it and not acting upon it. Whereas what you just said, you're consuming it, you're making notes, and then the big thing is then to go and to actually do something about it.
Yeah.
But it's too easy to just listen to it and not do anything. Now, again, there is times for that. You know, there are times when I'll listen to an educational episode.
Mm-hmm.
And just enjoy that.
Yeah.
But I have a belief that if I'm wanting to listen to something for enjoyment, it shouldn't be educational. I should make that an actual educational thing.
Well, that's what I love, because you introduced me to the podcast. What was the podcast you introduced me to? The values one and the procrastination. Solved?
Yes.
Solved. Oh, honest to goodness, that absolutely changed my way of thinking. But what I like about it is they've broken it down. They've got the resources attached to it, which I haven't looked at, but I'm aware of, so I know I can. And that's on my voice memo. Go and look at the values and make sure that you align yourself to a theory or a method, because that was quite overwhelming. There was an awful lot of stuff going on there. And I found actually having a break from the driving instructor podcasties things out there, has helped me be a better driving instructor as well, because we've talked before about the fact that this often you'll get resources that complement. I was talking recently about Stuart had a lovely golf experience, and I won't go into it in too much detail. But him being in that learner role in an environment where he was experiencing something is something he can then transfer to driving. So me listening to a values podcast, there's nothing to do with driving instruction, actually has helped me form better ideas about being a driving instructor, because it's my ideas based on the foundational skills of values. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The side story, really, I find this interesting. That podcast solved. So I decided to change my podcast and record the episode on it. I decided I'm going to do episode workbooks. They then did exactly the same thing. And obviously, not copy me, I don't think I'd released it at the time. But I'm like, if Mark Manson's doing that, I must be doing something right here.
I like them because I like the whole dynamic of the two, and it's just really easy listening. And actually, I don't think I would have been a podcast, but I now listen to The Diary of the CEO. I like it. It's something that I've started to expand. And do you know what's interesting? It comes right back to Lou. And she said, if you want to become a better driving instructor, choose to learn something out with the driving industry. And I didn't get it at the time. And actually, interestingly, I didn't get it at the time. And I think for me, at the time she said it, I actually needed more driving industry stuff. I think now that I'm in a place where I feel semi-comfortable, if you like, because I don't want to get too comfortable, I'm mindful of saying that, then I'm opening up my mind to different resources and things that can complement it and not just driving related stuff.
Do you want to take a moment to remind people what you have to offer and where they can find it?
Yes. So you can find us at inspireinstructortraining.com, where we have a lovely group of helpful social media places for you to join, some videos and some resources, and also supportdrivingskill.com.
Excellent. All links will be in the episode description and probably the episode workbook as well. But big thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.